Welcome to the Talking Security Podcast. We will talk about items related to Microsoft security.
Hey, there are we again with a new Talking Security DevSecOps podcast episode. And we're back, still in the DevSecOps, what is it, circle?
Figure eight, that's a good thing, yeah.
And last time we discussed the release phase, and I think, Sander, you have prepared a few things already in our notes that we set up before our meeting. This time we have it about, we will talk about monitoring, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about monitoring today. So, you know, we've kind of already talked about, like, you know, like getting your workspaces kind of secured, and then we moved on to like code, securing the code writing process, building it, releasing it. And now you, of course, want to monitor that the things that are running somewhere, perhaps in the cloud, are also secure.
Yeah. And still, we're all back. So Pouyan, Sander, and Frans are hosting these this podcast, and we will talk you through everything DevSecOps. And as Sander said, we dive into monitoring. First question to introduce the monitoring phase. What should we monitor? Is that only the pipeline that we are building? Is that the code, for example? What kind of things can we monitor?
I think what you're saying about, like, just I want to briefly mention, like, what you say about the monitoring your pipelines is a really good idea. I think in this episode, we're going to talk a lot about, like, monitoring your applications, your infrastructure, and stuff like that, and making sure that that is secure, and how do you know that is secure? But you should also monitor your build and your release pipelines. We talked a lot about this in the previous episodes, but still, you could, instead of getting an error during your build that your code is insecure, you might also want to be notified, like, hey, heads up, your code won't compile in the pipeline because there has been a security vulnerability. You want to kind of know that in advance and not at the last moment. So I think that's a good place to kind of start, like making sure that everything is always monitored when you want to deploy, but now focusing on the, well, when it is actually running in the cloud, how do you make that secure?
Yeah. So to make it a bit more structured, we will start with monitoring on the build release pipelines. And maybe let's dive in after that in some security monitoring, what kind of products that we can use, more like that. I think that is the structure that we want to have for this episode. Yep.
Definitely.
Diving into monitoring in the build release pipelines, what kind of stuff do we have? What kind of stuff do we need to monitor? Because I can release a piece of software, but what steps do we need to take within that we dived in the previous episode? What steps? But what steps do we need to monitor?
I think Sander already gave a good intro of what we need to monitor. But I think to add to that, if you look at the whole DevSecOps, we are trying to build all kind of monitoring steps into the whole process, from release, from testing, and from a build. So we are already monitoring ahead, right? But after the release, I think it's an awesome, like what we discussed in our latest episode, after release, it's a handover moment that we go from piece of code towards an application running somewhere in cloud, AWS, Google, or in our on-prem environment. I think that's a change in the way we monitor our environment, because we, in the previous phases, we were monitoring what's going to happen, what has changed, and what did we found in there. And now we are actually going to monitor it when it is running in a production or an acceptance environment to see, okay, what behaviors does it show. And I think we can separate that into several levels. because we have like an infrastructure level, like is our web services, our Kubernetes environment, or our databases, or is that functioning as we expected it to be? It can also be performance, right? It can be the load that we are generating on our certain resources. But on top of that, it comes, we are going to monitor how our application is behaving based on all kind of solutions like Application Insight, or we are sending our application logging towards the SIEM solution. And on top of that, a third layer, we have like a production layer, which we add on top in on our resources, which is also going to monitor. So we have multiple levels of monitoring when it comes to going from release to monitoring that are being added to our monitoring scope for our SecOps environment.
I think it would be kind of good to maybe kind of start talking about the applications. If I'm thinking like as a developer myself, I usually do add monitoring to my applications, right? So I monitor some health checks. I monitor the actions that are being performed. So I log stuff, or maybe I collect some traces and some events. I do like when someone uploads a file, I tell the system who was uploading a file or who was downloading something. But I don't do that with the eye of security. I just do it as if something goes wrong, if there's a bug, I can easily find what happened. So maybe Puyan, you can talk a little bit about, so how would you add security to the mix if we're using some monitoring like Azure Monitor, Application Insights and stuff like this? How do I as a developer make it easier for myself to figure out if everything is secure in my application?
Yeah. I think that's a good question, and I think to add on that, I was this week in a call with the product team regarding one of the Microsoft security products, and actually what they said is it's true, and they also projected it in a picture. Maybe we can share that somewhere on our socials. That when it comes to logging and monitoring and reacting, we often use the same data as IT operations and security operations. It's just the way how we interpret our the data that we are having. For example, the same data which represents high CPU load can mean certain behavior alarms and for the IT operations team, but it can also be interpreted for certain security, because that's also a security flaw. So when it comes to that, it's not, oh, we are doing security, we need certain other data, or we have completely different data. No, we all often have similar data on that. And when it comes to application security, I mean, so I think if we go back, what we discussed now is even on the application security, we have two layers, right? We have our protection layer, then we are going to look, for example, solutions like Defender for Cloud, but Defender for SQL, which is protecting us against SQL injection and that kind of behaviors. We have Defender for Storage, which is helping us protecting the activities on the storage to define or find certain hashes that does mean that certain files are infected. We have the same with Defender for API. We have the same with Defender for Web App. So we have different protection solutions which we can use for our solution, which is running on Azure, or even if it is running on AWS or our on-prem environment, right? So it's not only Azure side. So we need to take a look of our application in total.
So to ask a question about that. So let's say that I'm running like a .NET service, .NET API, for, I don't know, some order management kind of thing, or maybe some files. So I'm currently already kind of logging some stuff like, hey, user is placing order, user is canceling order, user is uploading file or downloading file, and so, you know, stuff. And there's security.
User activities.
Yeah, kind of. So I can't really, you know, I shouldn't in the code be able to download someone else's file. So what kind of, from that kind of mindset, how does the vendor for API help me? What kind of features does it give me that I might not know I need?
So the Fedora API, it's a brand new product, and it's really amazing in the sense of how important it is, I think. But if we take a look back on the Fedora API, in the highlight, some major solution is one, it controls if your API is secure, it is using the right authentication protocols and that kind of configuration. Second, it will also monitor if there has been any vulnerability found based on anomaly detection. So for example, normally you say API/users and then /user ID it gives a certain user back, right?
Yeah.
But that we have had in the past that if you would put there some escape characters and good error handling, it will return all the users, that kind of scenario. So it protects you against that kind of behavior as well. And if you would integrate it with Purview, it gives you also the possibility to say, okay, I have a data set and my data set contains a username, passwords, email, but also the user base send number, right? The social number.
Yeah, like the social security number of the Netherlands kind of thing. Yeah.
But you can say, okay, using Purview, you can use data classification and say, okay, this API isn't allowed to return that value.
Can you just for the viewers the listeners, could you or Franz, I'm not sure who can explain it better, explain what Purview is for people that might not know?
Purview is a combination of different products within the Microsoft 365 environment, basically. So it's the compliance, more like the compliance stuff, and Pooyan, correct me if I'm wrong. Like device, the data leakage prevention, DLP, the Azure Information Protection, as it was called a few years ago. I don't know what the exact name is at the moment, but protecting your documents, doing rights management on top of a certain document, that I can send you a document with some rights management on it. And then you have that document, but you aren't able to open it when I set the correct permissions on that.
So it does a little bit more protection. Like, for example, but this is not really related to web APIs. We're doing a little sidestep to 365 here, if I understand correctly.
Purview is a broader kind of applications, security applications within the M365 ecosystem. So it's not directly related to Defender for API. What it does with Defender for API, you can use certain information, what Pooyan was explaining a few seconds ago, like your social security number, that kind of stuff that can be used, but that's also used within Purview, for example. So it's
like you can integrate it into Purview, and then Purview will do monitoring and all that kind of stuff.
I don't know if it's integrated, but it's using the same stuff.
Gotcha.
It's using
the
Purview engine under the hood.
Okay.
So we have two Purviews. We have 365 Purview. And we have Azure Purview.
Formerly known as. No, okay, okay.
No. It's we have Azure Purview for your infrastructure side. But we have also 365 Purview, and the Fedora API is using the Purview engine, let's say, the engine under the hood of Purview for doing this kind of stuff.
Okay. And what it makes so funny within this this podcast that we are doing together, I'm more a workplace security guy. Pooyan has the data center security stuff, and Sander is the developer in this area. So within DevSecOps, talking about DevSecOps, I think all three areas coming into this place that can be a bit discussion about on different platforms, because everyone has a different background.
Yeah. So kind of to go back to that Defender for API thing, I think one thing you mentioned, which I'm interested in, if I'm understanding this correctly, So like I can have my own built-in kind of security in my .NET application, but the vendor for API just analyzes a lot more of the stuff that's happening, and it will just kind of analyze that at real time.
Yeah, it's and protection.
Gotcha. And then will it also be able to, like, I can say, like, hey, user 22 is downloading a file from user 24, but will it actually, I think, will it also analyze, like, where the user is performing actions from and stuff like that? Is it also smart enough to do things like a little bit more, like, who the actual user behind the request is? So you could, for example, say, hey, this user lives in the Netherlands, but is suddenly downloading files from Korea. You know, that is might be the same user. It's allowed in the application, but it is still a security thing. Is something like that a thing?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because I think that's also the where we switch from a protection to going towards a detection, towards a SIEM solution. Because when we look at Defender for API, it's fully API-based. It monitors and protects your API, right?
If yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, okay.
Defender for SQL, it monitors and protects your SQL environment. But for scenarios that you are, and that this is really something we have been working with some customers of us, and this is really awesome, because you are going to bring all this user behavior within the application logging from different environments, because they can have like their own identity provider in the application. So you want to monitor how many times a user has done a password reset. And for example, if a user has done 20 password reset requests within 5 minutes, that means there's something strange happening with that user.
Yeah.
That including with a successful password reset, and that user suddenly starts to download all kinds of stuff within your application, then you can say, okay, something else is happening as well.
Yeah, okay. Now, that sounds really useful. Like as a developer, having to build something like that myself sounds like a huge pain that I don't really want to build. And it's also like the customer doesn't really care. I think my customers or the clients I work, the companies I work for wouldn't really care. It's like, yeah, but that can't go wrong, right? But something like that, if that's integrated into such a product, I think that can add a lot of value.
Yeah.
Talking about APIs and stuff, how does, you mentioned already Azure Monitor or Application Insights, how can that help in these kind of ways? Because with Application Insights, I can see statistics within an application. Mm-hmm. And if things going wrong, can I detect with probably Azure Monitor or Application Insights, can I detect the stuff that Sander was mentioning? If I am a user of an application and I download stuff, and I shouldn't, it shouldn't possible to do that. Is there a possibility to make detection rules or monitor rules within Application Insight or Azure Monitor, for example?
I mean, I'm going to answer as a developer, but I'm curious if Bouillon knows anything for like Defender products that it can be a bit more smart. Because I mean, you could definitely like create metrics and alerts and logging, like, hey, the user is downloading a file. And then you can set up alerts and metrics and events, like, hey, if a user with the same ID has downloaded 20 files in this period of 5 minutes, then I want to activate an alert. And then you can set up alert grouping. So with function apps, you can alert to Slack or Mail or PagerDuty and all of these different platforms. That is possible. But I've never created something like that because it's a whole lot of work. So I'm wondering, maybe Puyan, if you know about anything. Like, this sounds more like an identity kind of thing. Is there something that Microsoft offers to kind of help you with this? Because I know there's like conditional, sorry to interrupt. There's the additional access thing, right? And that's identity, the governance thing, where you can get, say, like, hey, the user needs to log in like with extra protection if they're suddenly doing weird things. Does something also exist for that on like application layer?
I'd like to answer that because conditional access is more for your own environment. And nowadays, mm-hmm. We have our external IDs also within Azure AD. So it's possible to do that with that. Mm-hmm. But the Bojan, correct me if I'm wrong, but if we look at the identity part with B2C and external identities within Entra or a specific B2C tenant that you can connect to your application, then it's quite hard to do stuff with session controls and so on. It's more for your IT environment to deliver deliver an application to your IT managed devices to secure the data that's in your app, so to containerize that specific app, and not for B2C scenario, so to say. So I think that that's a bit of a difference with condition access. Yeah. It's more created for securing our own IT environment and not for
application level. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, but that makes sense to me. So do you know, Puyon, of anything that's like any products that can help me with like getting notifications when users are doing weird like security related things in my applications?
Yeah, and for that we often use products like Sentinel, Microsoft Sentinel.
Mm.
And because often for your application you are using platforms as Okta or One Identity, which provide you a dedicated identity provider, right, for your application. This is similar to Entra B2C. That provides that as well. And what you can do is you can attach that to your Sentinel environment, which is a big data solution, of course, for the listeners as well who don't know Microsoft Sentinel. That's Microsoft SIEM solution. So
you what aggregate. Does SIEM mean?
That's always a good question.
that you don't remember.
Security, yeah, information, and event management. Yeah,
thank you.
So it's like SIAM, like SIAM.
It's
customer identity and access management, SIAM.
You need to see it as a big data solution, right? It's built on top of the customer credit platform as what Maxim is providing.
Yeah, the KQL thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what they what you can do is you can attach one or multiple products or log sources or anything that contains data.
Yeah. If you have an application somewhere that generate logs based on NXLog or whatever.
Yeah.
It's generating logs, and we can ingest that within the tables of the log analytics stuff from Sentinel, and then you can do some querying and creating alerts, and then you can do your own stuff within Sentinel.
So I can like with log analytics and stuff like that, I mostly have like a nice container table with all of my application logs, and with Sentinel I can send that to Sentinel, and Sentinel basically contains all the user activities but also application. I can correlate these things together.
Yeah, so Sentinel is a solution on top of log analytics workspace. But what it gives you as additional features is you can send additional data to it. You can just use the API and then send your data to it. It will create a table for you and store that. If you have, for example, an on-prem identity provider running in your environment, like Okta, those provide often syslog information. You can use syslog to send that to Sentinel as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have also maybe some Oracle database running on-prem. Yeah, I mean, there are not
security risk.
No, that's definitely security risk. But yeah, you can do
it's
you
a
can
risk
do anything
for your wallet.
Yeah.
So what you do is you get all that data from all kind of places and then create a correlation based on that data.
But so, do I need to create all that myself? Like, maybe this is a way too in-depth of a question, because if user 22 is performing a request, that is actually Frans doing that. Like, how can I correlate that together? Maybe this is way too in-depth. I'm missing like 20 steps. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That's like a question as a developer I would ask, because the Sentinel thing sounds way out of my comfort zone.
So I think it to don't go too deep dive in it, because it also all depends on your configuration. The best consultant answer, of course.
Yeah, it depends
on your configuration.
You can hire me. I'll do it for you.
Yeah. No, but without a joke, it depends on your configuration. But for example, if you store in your identity provider, in your Okta identity provider, that France has as user ID user 002, and user 002 is used in your API authentication and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Of course, that will pop back into the Sentinel because that data will be available. But let's say you are using 002 there, but you don't have the reference to France, but you have in a certain different platform application API that match, then you can import that from there as well.
Yeah, okay. Sentinel,
and then aggregate, create that.
You have the that. The hardest thing, what Puyan explained at the moment, the hardest thing is to correlate different data sources to each other. So you need an identifier to correlate data to each other. And I think that is one of the hardest things within monitoring and bringing all the data together. And that's not only within the security space. I talked the last few weeks a lot to some data people. They correlating different data sources for publishing data to the business, for example. They have the same challenge.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. It's not a once. It's definitely not a one size fits all. Okay.
I know. No,
there are like frameworks. If you look at the ISO and all. The big, there are some security frameworks that provide you some data, but what Franz also mentioned, what we are really missing, and I think that's something for developers to think about as well when developing applications, is to come up with a standardized data format.
Yeah.
So, for example, to go back, what we had in the IT infra environment is that you had you had different firewall vendors, right? You had Palo Alto, you had Forti, you had Checkpoint, and they were all generating their own login in their own format and in their own style. So then we got an initiative which come out with the Ceph format, it's a community-based formatted data set that if you want to log your information, this is the format that you need to log it.
Like any information or more like network logging?
Network logging.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you have because some vendors say it's source IP, some say source, source_IP. So this specific differences makes it very hard for security to come up with detections and use cases which can fit all the models. And that's often a difficult step for organizations that have a lot of in-house built applications, for example, to create use cases that can cover. But don't worry, we have also solutions for that as well. But
sounds like AI. You're gonna say AI in the next sentence, but
in everything, co-pilot for all.
Okay, so maybe to go back a little step, we talked a little bit about Copilot for AI. Now we talked a little bit about identity management and correlating data sets and stuff like that. So maybe I would like to hear a little bit more about this Defender for Cloud. So now we kind of secured API, and if listeners really want to know a lot more about different Defender products, I believe you guys also with the PMs from Microsoft made some episodes about different Defender products.
Yep.
So definitely go listen to those. So as for me as a developer, how can something like Defender for Cloud be interesting? Because this might go a little bit more on the infrastructure side of things. So can you tell me a little bit more about I'm running stuff in Azure, stuff in the cloud. Why would I use Defender for Cloud? How does it help me secure stuff?
So Defender for Cloud is if you look at the Microsoft security stack, we define it often in two pieces, right? We have 365 Defender, and we have, which contains the endpoint, Office 365, data, identity. And then we have the Defender for Cloud, which is really focused on the infrastructure, databases, and all that kind of APIs, Kubernetes. And on top of that, we have Sentinel, which covers both those environments, and it gives you the possibility to add additional log sources to your to get a full view of your environment or application or data center, etc.
Okay.
Yeah. And to clarify a little bit, Poyan, if you talk about Defender for Cloud, like M365 Defender, there are different products within Defender for Endpoint, Defender for Identity, and so on. It's within M365 Defender. And also in Defender for Cloud, we have different products like Defender for SQL, Defender for Database.
Okay, like, that's interesting.
Like it's not Defender for SQL anymore, it's Defender for Databases. Because it's not only SQL, it's also
other things. Yeah, gotcha.
Also other databases that are running.
Yeah, okay. But these Defender things are kind of, you know, an umbrella term, is what we're saying.
The Defender for Cloud is the umbrella for different ones within the Azure platform, basically. Yeah. And I think we had a discussion also with Jeroen Janssen here in the Netherlands multiple times. How many defenders do we have? I think there are 100. Yeah, more than 100 in the meantime.
Really?
But that's we have Defender for Database, but also Defender for Database for Government, because within the normal Azure platform we have Defender for Database, and in the Government platform we have a different one. So. And because of that,
Defender for everything.
Yeah, there's a Defender for Defender products. Yeah. Okay, continue. Sorry,
but like Poyan said, different Defender products within Defender for Cloud. And I think you, as a developer, which one can help? Yeah, it depends on which resources you are using. So yeah. When you look at Defender for API, when you have an API defined in your application that I can use, then Defender for API comes in place. When you have a backend based on SQL or another database platform, Defender for Database could be in place and could help you, in my opinion.
Okay. So to make this, I think we interrupted you a little bit earlier, Poyan. Is there something you still want to add on top of this?
No, I think what's important is to also notice that Defender for Cloud doesn't mean only Azure.
That's a good thing to say. Yeah.
It's so Defender for Cloud in basis is you can split it into cloud providers, let's say. You can onboard your AWS, Google, but you can also, and then it will analyze your cloud in general, like what kind of resources are running there, what kind of vulnerability, what kind of policies you have on your AWS, Google, and Azure.
It's multi-cloud as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
And so that's one important. Second, if you have, then you come to the resources side. So for example, we have Defender for SQL, we have Defender for servers, right? But that doesn't mean that only servers that are running in the cloud as well. So you have also an on-prem environment. So if you onboard your on-premise environment, your data center with Azure Arc, that will be part of your cloud as well. So it will treat the on-prem data center as cloud. So less relevant for developers, but good to know for IT.
It's still a good thing to know. Yeah, no, that sounds interesting, definitely.
Yeah, and going for Defender for Cloud, focusing on for developers, I think a lot of the most important things are the Defender for DevOps, which is part of the Defender for Cloud these days, which we discussed in earlier stages. Like it has all to do with your GitHub and your Azure DevOps environment, monitoring if the policies are good, all kind of stuff.
No, that's a really good thing you mentioned. Like I always set those up once. Also am always the one that sets those up because no one cares to set all of those things up. There's just so much to set up, so I like to do it once, and I never look at it again. And that's kind of one of those things that you're like, yes, as a developer, I don't really care, but like in a bigger organization, you want to make sure that those things are set correctly, right? Yep. Like even if you have set up like some infrastructure that deploys your environments and sets all the policies, you want to make sure that you want to be monitored that they change. I think that could be a really interesting thing to kind of do that you mentioned here about DevSecOps. Like not just your applications. In the beginning, we talked about like your infrastructure as well and where your code is hosted.
Yeah, I think indeed, Sander. I think in my personal opinion, cloud has two powerful things, items. It's freedom and it is speed. With freedom, I mean the developer needs to be free in the choices he or she makes in what type of resources he or she needs for the application to run. If you prefer your application to run on a VM, needs to be fine. And if it's on a web app, it should be fine. And an archives cluster should be fine as well. And it needs to be fast. So you need to be able to adjust and develop and deploy really fast. So for an organization, it's really important to focus around the framework. That's why we are doing the whole DevSecOps series, right? To give, so you are ahead of time in place, you have your toolings and platforms in place so that the developer can just do it, what he is doing and where he's good at without being blocked or et cetera by the security.
Okay, no, that's a good point. I like that. Maybe I see that we're going already, we're like we're already doing like 36 minutes. I feel like we kind of want to maybe stop kind of soon. I want to ask like a kind of interesting question to kind of maybe wrap some of these things up. So as a developer, I'm monitoring my applications, usually a lot like based on the activity of the users. And now we want to talk a little bit more security. So Bouillon or Frans, from your point of view, what are like tough monitoring things that a developer can help you with? You already talked about like having this the same, a better standard for logging and stuff like that, for network stuff that, you know, gets maybe a bit far away from the normal developer. But what are things that a developer needs to think about when monitoring security? Or what are things that we forget?
Start with building application logging into your application, I would say. I think you are doing that a lot, Sander. We have seen similar environments with different customers that they have tons of in-house built applications and the applications don't have any logging at all. So we always say it starts with having the logging available, even if it is in a text format, right? Because then we can start from there, pull that, monitor that. So when it comes to the developer, that would be a key. And then second would be in a standardized format.
So like structured logging and stuff like that.
If you do it for your application one, do it in this application two in the same format. That will make life much easier. But I think what's also part of the monitoring, which is if you focus back a little bit from security, is starting using and implementing solutions like Application Insight, right? To give even more logging, because you don't need to do that much in your application logging, right? You just put that in your header of the application and you have it probably.
Yeah, you just start at the startup. You just kind of add it. It's like two lines of code to add it. It's really, really simple.
Exactly. Yeah, so
that's the most, one of the most important things, to add logging in a structured way.
So we
can use it to correlate to other data sources.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, and also like for the developers, what you can do is you can make sure that if you're like logging something that a user did, like try to always say like the parameter user ID. You know, like kind of. Maybe that's a bit detailed, but like every application should use the same logging parameters, because then you can correlate them over all of the applications. Like I don't know
if it's there, but there needs to be some framework for this, that every developer knows if I do it that way, then our security personnel can handle that in a correct way.
I think there should be policies for that. I mean, I'm not sure. There are definitely ways, but a lot of developers don't know about structured logging. But I think that's a really good place to start. Yeah.
No.
And nice. Logging is more than your application, right? It's, don't forget your infrastructure. That's part of it as well, right? Your SQL logging, your web app logging, your all kind of logging, which is your identity, what we discussed a lot. Don't forget that as well. And so bring that as well and talk to your security. Start with solutions like Microsoft Sentinel, which provides you very easy and fast onboarding solutions to get all that kind of data, different sources, different models to one place. And then from there, start using use cases that are for your application specifically, right? Which you don't like. If after certain password resets, you don't like that, do let an alert out when it's sent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
That's
thanks.
Operations, guys, and monitoring.
Thanks. Anything to add from another perspective or so? Otherwise, we will finish up.
I think when we prepared a bit of this episode, we had a couple of links that can be very useful for listeners to kind of learn more about these Defender products, learn more about Microsoft recommendations of certain security policies within their products. I think we could maybe put those in the show notes. I think that'd be
useful. I will do that in the show notes so everyone can learn together with us. And then I say till next time. And what is next time? Do we
That's
have
a great question?
Do we have an idea what we will do for follow up?
I mean, maybe we can talk a little bit more about infrastructure monitoring. I think that would be kind of interesting to learn more and more about. Because, we talked a lot about application monitoring here, but like, how do you? Yeah, maybe your application talks to your database securely, but how do you know that your database hasn't been breached? Mm-hmm. Stuff like that might be a very interesting topic for an episode.
And, including if you're building an application and using my identities and not directly Entra identity or Okta, whatever, but more like B2C, maybe it's good to add that to the topics that you already covered.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think we the monitoring thing. There's so many layers. Like we started this episode talking about different layers of monitoring. We talked a lot about application. We touched a bit upon like identity, networking. But there's still a lot about more to talk about on identity. There's more to talk about on infrastructure. I think we could do another episode about those.
Let's continue that in the next episode. And let's do that.
All right, sounds great.
Thanks. If you love this episode or our podcast, in the screen on YouTube, there are different links in the screen. Follow us on Instagram, on LinkedIn.
Follow us on TikTok.
On YouTube, on Spotify, other podcast platforms. Give us a thumbs up or whatever. React and give feedback so we can improve our episodes. So thank you for listening, for viewing, and till next time.